Have you ever been to a newish shopping area in Leicester called High Cross? You may have, you may not. You may go Nottingham way, I don't know, when it comes to it there. But it's not so new now. Can you remember it being built? I can, you know. I can remember what used to be there beforehand there. Demolition of the old shops and the factories. Do you look with fascination at the development growing? When you see something growing, you know, like that there, do you look at it and think, wow, how do they do this and how do they do that? You know, that's marvellous the way they achieve it there. Yeah? Do you find the shop something of an attraction? Then you need to buy something there. Well, let's ask some questions about the people who worked on the construction. The theme today, or this evening, is how to build. How to build. And first question is, why did they do it? Well, you know why they did it. I know why they did it. They did it to make money. Pride in the structure being built, yes, but they did it to make money. That's why they did it there. Who did it? That's my next question for you. Who did it? And the answer is bricklayers, electricians, plasterers, steel workers, and a host of other workers who were coordinated by a clerk of works and occasionally an architect made his or her input on how the plans were being followed. So that's who did it. Thirdly, how did they do it? Probably 8, or maybe 7:30 to 4:30 most days, with a little bit of overtime and maybe a bit of weekend working for when the job's got a bit tricky or a bit extensive as far as that's concerned. Maybe weekend working sometimes to meet the deadlines and a fair amount of machinery to actually make the work easier there. That's the sort of thing that happened there. Now today, in this particular chapter, we're looking at the rebuilding of the wall of Jerusalem. And we see on a picture here, the wall of Jerusalem coming up. Yeah, you can just about make it out. I can anyway. You might have better eyes and therefore see it better than me when it comes to it there. But it was no easy wall, was it? When you look at the way in which it goes round in circles like that, probably following the contours of the land, in that particular way there. And they worked round from the sheep gate right the way round in an anti-clockwise direction in the description of how they did it there. Now, this was no garden wall. It was 3 yards thick. Right? That's the first thing to realise. That's how thick it was. Yeah. Probably beyond that first row from here. 3 yards. It was 10 yards high. So, yeah, above your ceiling probably. Yeah. That's how big it was. That's the job that they had to do. Ordinary people, not bricklayers or electricians or steel workers, no machinery, nothing like that there. They had that to do there. And they made it stone upon stone, which was generally nearby because the walls had been pulled down anyway in that particular way. The chapter shows and saying that doing are compatible with each other. Yeah? So it's not just talking about it, it's actually getting on with it as well. So that's what we have. They said, the people did, let us rise up and build in chapter 2 and verse 18. And it can often be different because someone may say, I will do so and so for you. Maybe something at church or maybe something at home. And you're still waiting for so and so to be done. That can happen in life. Sometimes a dad might say, oh, I'll take you swimming to their child. But other things get in the way, or the priorities come along, and it doesn't happen there. James encourages us to be doers of the word and not hearers only. The people of Jerusalem got on with it. They thought, they decided, and they lost no time in getting on with it. So that's great. First point then is this. Why did they do it? That's the first point then. Why did they do it? Well, not for money. Not for profit. Not for a blue plaque on the wall when they'd finished the job there. Nothing like that at all. The work hadn't developed or grown despite all the efforts and intentions of returning exiles. But what we have here is a group of people who caught the vision. They grasped the vision. Nehemiah had inspired them with the challenge in chapter 2. They had seen the ruins long enough, the stones upturned and the wood blackened, and they had tried before, but now they caught the vision. Let me tell you a story from a book. Who You Are When No One Is Looking is the book. And the story starts like this. It started like so many evenings, Mum and Dad at home and Jimmy playing after dinner. Mum and Dad were absorbed with jobs and did not notice the time. It was a full moon and some of the light seeped through the windows. Then Mum glanced at the clock. Jimmy, it's time to go to bed. Go up now and I'll come and settle you later. Unlike usual, Jimmy went straight upstairs to his room. An hour or so later, his mum came up to check if all was well. And to her astonishment, she found that her son was quietly staring out of the window at the moonlit scenery. What are you doing, Jimmy? I'm looking at the moon, Mummy. Well, it's time to go to bed now. As one reluctant boy settled down, he said, Mummy, you know, one day I'm going to walk on the moon. Who would have known that that boy, in whom the dream was planted that night, would survive a near-fatal motorbike crash that broke nearly every bone in his body and would bring to fruition his dream 32 years later when James Irvin stepped onto the moon's surface, just one of the 12 representatives of the human race to have done so. He had a vision. Harry Sutton and the Bethel elders had a vision for Little Hill Church, putting a church on Little Hill Estate there, and we're the fruit of that vision now. And by God's grace, we're still going and growing. Around you and me, the work of the Lord needs building up. It may be lives that are broken by sin, relationships that have been stretched and strained at breaking point. It may be the loneliness of being on your own or the stress of waking nights with a little one. It could be any and various things other than those two. There is a great spiritual need of the people round about us, not only in church, but also around this building. Catch the vision. The second thing about these people is they loved the city. It inspired them. It got them going there. Yeah, bricks and mortar, the streets, the temple inspired them. They remembered with affection the glory of the Lord in the temple, and they were inspired. Just sit down and think about the good, gracious times you have experienced with the Lord. You know, times are many years in some cases, might be short in others, but that's what you have there. Times of quiet, when he spoke gently, his presence to reassure you, the times of joy and gladness, the pleasant times that inspired you. Think about a particular service. It may have been that. And the singing of a hymn or a verse from a part of the Bible. Sometimes a verse from the Bible, God's word, leaps out and actually hits us there. As I read Nehemiah this afternoon, not having, you know, sort of looked at, seen it before, you look at the words after him, after him, after him, time and again, coming up in this chapter there. God graciously, by his Spirit, inspires you and me so that we, as we read our Bible, or as we listen to a preacher, find ourselves inspired to live for God wholly and holy. So, why did they do it? They called a vision. Two, who did it? Eliashib, the high priest, was there, verse 1, with his fellow priests. No exemption from physical work for them by building up the sheep gate. They ministered by example as well as in the temple before the Lord. There were many people from high positions involved. Uzziah, a goldsmith, Melchizedek, Shalom, and rulers of districts. Verse 14 and 15, some rulers of half a district are mentioned later in the chapter. So you have the people who have responsibility, maybe, or a position in society. Secondly, you then have the ordinary people. The ordinary people and the servants were involved, and often near to their home. Yeah. It's lovely to see the readiness to serve and with such zeal. Such zeal there. There was little reserve when serving so passionately. The ordinary people of Tekoa put their nobles to shame in verse 5. We're told there. Many active from outside of Jerusalem and not inhabitants of Jerusalem, verse 2. Men of Jericho as well. Next to them repaired Mattathiah, the Gibeonite, and Jadon, the Merothothite. The men of Gibeon and Mizpah and others. Many Jews helped who wouldn't really benefit. But as far as they're concerned, that didn't matter. They wanted to see this particular wall built there. They wanted to be part of the work and part of the venture that was going to bring glory to God. And as we serve God in our various ways, we need that sort of vision too there. You and I should be prepared to serve God outside of our parish, if I might borrow a phrase from the Anglicans there. Because often we think about the church we're in and involved in it and often immersed in it when it comes to doing a variety of things. And we care passionately about that church and the people in that church there. But God would have us sometimes broaden our horizons. Our field of service is God's kingdom. And God's kingdom isn't just Shepshed or isn't just Little Hill. It's beyond that. It could be Nottingham, it could be Leicester, it could be various parts of this world where there are people who are seeking to make Christ known. Would you be prepared to go and spend a week helping on a camp, cooking on a camp, and helping teenagers enjoy themselves there, as well as learning about Christ? Yeah? Those things can happen, and you can be part of it there. Would you be willing to help build a house in Moldova or somewhere like that? Where's Moldova, they say? Yeah, it's in Europe. Yeah, on the edge of Europe, but it's there, all right there. Because there's a group called Operation Centurion in UFM, which go out to various parts of this world and help in some physical construction way to move that work forward. Great to see. Good to be part of it there. Alternatively, you can be at home and work for Wycliffe, or somebody like that. Because you can do computer work at home and you can help further the work of the gospel there. That, and there's a whole variety of other things that you can be doing there. Some will say, Barry, what you got up your sleeve? Well, the answer is I've got nothing up my sleeve other than my arm, you know, when it comes to it there. And the answer is not much. It's evident from God's word that Jews not living in Jerusalem volunteered to help to build the wall. We too should be prepared to serve God in other areas there. So have a wider vision as well. Let's think about some other people who are worthy of mentions. We've got Shalom's daughters. It would be dishonorable to suggest they were there making the tea, the coffee, and bringing the biscuits, etc. No, of course they weren't. What were they doing? They got their sleeves up and they were helping to build the wall in that particular case there. We have also tradesmen in verse 8 and verse 32 who excused themselves from running their shops, and they were prepared to close the shop and to get on with building the Lord's work. Hananiah had five reasons why he could have rested, but no, he was involved. You, individually and collectively, are vital to God's work in this church. Yeah? So, we have that then. Why did they do it? Who did it? And thirdly, how did they do it? The answer is, not 9 to 5. Or 8 to 4:30, whatever. But with great sacrifice of time and energy. They serve with great zeal and energy there. Not something we have as we get older so much, is it? You know, I don't find I've got that much energy nowadays. But I do find a nap after lunch gives me a bit of zip in the afternoon when it comes to it there. So I'd encourage you in that as well. Be active and eager, not just when others are looking, by sharing the workload on each section, they helped one another. Each group being responsible for their patch. Each group had an integral part to play. The words next to them, next to him, beyond him and beyond them are used over 20 times in this chapter. These verses show that God's people must work together, worship together, pray together for the Lord's work to be completed. We must share the workload of prayer privately and in the prayer meeting. We must share the workload of caring by loving each other so that God is honored and fellow Christians are supported. Your presence at a meeting is just as important as the preacher's presence at a meeting. Yeah? You know, in previous days at Little Hill, how did you get out to the midweek meeting as a couple when you've got children? Well, you actually babysat for, somebody came and babysat for you. Now, in our particular case, it was a young person from Bethel Church that came and babysat for us so that we could get out to the midweek meeting together. They dried up, that sauce anyway. And so what happened after a while was that we knew a couple who went to Holy Trinity in town, and we babysat so that they could go to their midweek meeting, and they came and babysat for us so that we could go to our midweek meeting. So there are various ways in which we can get on and do things there. Sometimes we say to ourselves, I've retired. I don't go to those things. I don't go out after dark now. It's too much as far as that's concerned. Well, it doesn't have to be, because you can be there together with God's people there. So can I encourage you to share the workload? Can I also share with you a challenge? I was reading a prayer letter from a man called Leonardus recently, and he was out in the open air in Greece. And this is how he writes. She was cute as I stood in the central square of one of our evangelistic activities. A mother and her little daughter, around 4 years old, was passing by. A little girl turned to inspect and touched an oversized statue of a great politician who lived 100 years ago, which stands conspicuously in the square. The inquisitive lass started asking questions about the statue, and the proud mother trying to answer. I was standing a few yards in front of the statue. At that moment, the mother turned towards me, and our eyes met momentarily. Almost instinctively, I gave her a broad smile and accompanied it with a complimentary comment. She's going to be an historian, that little girl. Do you think so? The mother, well pleased, responded. As they resumed their stroll, the mother noticed the literature I was holding in my hands and addressed the girl, "Take a leaflet." "Why should we take a leaflet?" said the little girl. "To read it," the mother explained. I thought to myself, a kind, casual comment can have a tremendous impact upon somebody. Can I challenge you to make kind, casual comments? Maybe to people in the street that you don't know, maybe to someone in your own home, wherever they're. As Christians, we should be scattering them far and wide. They don't necessarily have to be biblical or anything like that there, but they can be kind, casual comments, which may lead to other things in that situation. How did they do it? Well, let's return to that. By the help of the unnamed. Now, who's not mentioned in this particular chapter? Yet the whole book is about him. Nehemiah. He's not mentioned one iota there. Yeah? And that's what we have. Now, as far as he was concerned, it was, in fact, thanking them for their efforts. His servants would have been helping, because he had quite a number of those there. Primarily, he coordinated where the groups of people were to work, yet there is no mention of his valuable task. Some builders did not waste valuable time commuting from one end of Jerusalem to the other. Towards the end of the chapter, the phrase "in front of their house" happens several times. Delegation is written all through this chapter, and with the responsibility given to many men. So, again, I give you another encouragement. Wives, are you prepared to see them helping in some particular activity, your husband now, rather than at home? Husbands, are you prepared to let your wife go and talk and meet and visit others in the church while you look after the home and keep it running there? Yeah, that's a possibility there. Are you prepared to release their people from family responsibilities and take them on yourself so that the other half can actually get on with doing something for God and do something glorifying to God there? Would you be prepared to release your wife or your husband so that they can get on with the work of the Lord? Well, often we can do it together, but not always. But not always there. So, can I encourage you to catch the vision? Be prepared to support and encourage one another and keep sharing the workload as you serve God here in Shepshire.